This is the Mason Vera Payne Show, your go-to lifestyle program, covering everything from technology and gaming to movies, TV shows, and pop culture to the supernatural and beyond. Brought to you by WGNRadio.com with your host, the unabridged millennial, Mason Vera Payne.
When it comes to broken metas, Riot Games will change the mechanics to end them. A good example of this is the Gold Funnel Strat, where Riot Games nerfed the jungle's ability for gaining money from in-lane minions. Recently, they nerfed the Sona Taric Strat that originated in Europe. Envin Global Esports reporter Nick Geraci is going to join me to discuss the pros and cons of cheap metas and how they affect the overall game. Thanks for joining me, Nick.
Thanks again for having me. Good to be back.
When it comes to League of Legends, in your opinion, 10 of the most broken metas of all time.
There's so many to choose from. I'm not going to be in any particularly ranked order, but just some things over the years that have really frustrated me. In 2015, meta was objectively healthy. There were control mages in the mid lane, but because of how powerful Azir was, it was like every other control mage, no matter how many you played, no matter what it was just the worst version of Azir. So you got this thing where it was basically like you either ban Azir or one team plays Azir and one team plays Victor and kind of takes the soft loss. And it was my least favorite meta because I love the diversity in mid lane now, and that was just the antithesis of that in so many different ways. So, same year, we also had Runeglaive Ezreal mid, which is like taking the AP jungle item Runeglaive and smite mid, and then Ezreal was able to do like almost full health bars with his ultimate. It was really, really gimmicky. See, I'm trying to think of some other ones. Another one that was really bothersome to me was the Feral Flare meta, if you recall, that jungle item where you could kind of just farm these stats and this item up, and you know, if you had it, you just kind of farmed up, and you could, depending on if you, you know, were Master D or, you know, Udi or whatever, you could just take over the game in that way. And speaking of Master Yi, if people who are annoyed by Master Yi now, like, you should see Season 3. Master Yi was able to build AP and do so much more than what he could do now. And he could also heal a lot more. It was absolutely insane. People were getting pent heals with him all the time. And he was honestly played mid lane a lot because of how powerful of a magic damage like threat that he was. It was absolutely bonkers. So that's five right there. As far as five more, I really, really didn't like the... if I'm being completely honest, like, I know this is, like, somewhat popular. I liked where mages in the bot lane, like, ended up going and eventually, but at first when it was just, like, Vladimir and Swain, like, I think I liked those in context of other mages, but, like, I thought, like, at the time it was really boring and frustrating, and really it felt like the only reason that those picks worked were because, like, they were just really good in every role at the time, like, all three, like, soul, like, lanes, and that was when, like, there were no good marksmen. So it wasn't like, oh, you can play mostly marksmen and some mages work. It was like, you know, it was all mages. And I think that was actually objectively healthy for the game at all. Another annoying meta was the meta golem meta where it was just three top laners. It was Maokai, Poppy, and Echo, and they all built the same thing. They built Iceborne Gauntlet, Sunfire Cape, Spirit Massage, same three items every time. And they were able to do so much damage, they were so fast, and they were tanky, and they would never die, and it was the most frustrating thing. a Poppy that was building full tank could, like, 1v3 your team and kill all of you. It was absolutely insane. There was a patch 4.20 where Warwick was absurdly strong. He had something like a 72% win rate on that patch or something. They had to hotfix him because of how broken he was. Similarly, the highest win rate in the history of the game was Skarner after his rework initially was so strong he had a 78% win rate across all solo queue levels, so that was a really annoying time before they nerfed him because it was pretty much the team that gets Skarner is a free win, basically, and so then therefore also you kind of have to ban the champion, which was annoying because it would have been nice to actually be able to interact with the new kit to see how it was, but we didn't really get to until like a month or so after because initially it was either so strong that it was banned out or like when you played against it you didn't really get to interact, you just lost. And then let's see, okay, two more. I really didn't like when I thought the meta overall was okay in this case, but there was, like, a good time in, like, the end of 2014, beginning of 2015, where the meta as a whole was kind of diverse and interesting, but it was literally Lucian and Corki as in the bot lane every single game. Like, I'm not even kidding. Every single game. And they weren't worth banning because there were higher priority picks to ban. I'm not kidding. Like 30 games in a row of Lucian versus Corki. And I like both those champions, but seeing them that many times in a row, maybe it was just a repetition thing, but it was any meta where the viable pool of champions is that shallow, I think, isn't good. And then lastly, I really didn't like the funnel meta. I think now, like, seeing how she was able to kind of pull it off, like, in this spring was kind of interesting, so it was, like, a one-time special thing. But when it was, like, the ideal way to play the game, I don't think that was healthy or good for the game. And it was really, really, like, kind of annoying, if I'm being honest, just because it's, like, it's okay to have different strategies. But, like, to then, like, kind of, like, to be, like, this entirely new way to play that clearly isn't, like, lending itself to, like, what the game is all about. It felt very, like, counterintuitive to what League of Legends should be.
Now, in your opinion, what region is the best for coming up with the broken meta?
Right now, it's definitely Europe. And Europe, and that's kind of spearheaded by G2. G2 Esports is so aggressive, but so talented and coordinated in their crazy plays that, like, they work because of how talented they all are and how they're always on the same page. There's never any, like, you know, misconnections in their communication. Like, when one player goes, the rest of them, like, you know, without hesitation, follow up. And because of that, they can use different champion picks, different individual specialty picks here, and, like, really kind of, like, flex and create these new compositions and succeed on them that we never would have thought of. And instead of it being, like, cheese, they turn it into, like, no, we're good enough to make this hard thing work, and so that's a strength because you don't know how to play against this, and we're good. We're good enough to do this. You know, we saw them innovate several times over. Caps innovated the meta a bunch of times on his own. Wonder playing Pyke top at MSI was a huge factor in a lot of G2's wins. So I think right now it's Europe. I think Europe is willing to play aggressive, think outside the box, and really try a lot of new things in a way that other regions really kind of aren't. China definitely is, like, as aggressive as Europe right now, but that doesn't mean they're, like, as innovative.
Okay, so Riot Games has a PBE server, which is, like, to test the next patch. Now, why isn't Riot catching any of these game-breaking mechanics in the PBE?
Well, sometimes, you know, what they'll do is they like to be cautious. You know, it's not often. Usually when something's super, super broken in the PBE, it's too much, and then they tune it down a little bit right before it gets released.
Now, there are a couple teams that I think of that kind of relied on broken meta, and I can't help but to think of 100 Thieves, because they were just so strong, and then they kind of fell off. And it's because when they were strong, they were using the tank ADC meta, and because that was kind of nerfed, now they're not as strong. So do you think sometimes teams rely too much on broken mechanics?
It depends, right? Like, I think, like, okay, for example, right now we have something in the pro play meta where it's very much like you can play Sona in the bot lane and kind of, like, share the initial, like, minions with your support, like a Taric or a Tahm Kench or something like that. And that doesn't really take as much skill as playing an AD carry or, like, a traditional Marksman, but it is broken. And so it's like, well, I don't think you can rely on these things. I think just because they are, like, really strong or something like that, or really, really just, like, cheap and really easily abusable, that doesn't mean that they shouldn't be played. Now, if that's all you can do, or per se, you can't really, like, if the meta changes and you can't learn how to adapt and play a secondary style as a team, like, regardless of what meta that is, no matter how legitimate or cheesy it is or it isn't, like, you have to be able to adapt and be able to play more than one style especially as the year goes on. Like, teams at Worlds who succeed can play two styles at a world-class level, at least.
So you spoke about Sona and Taric meta. Again, it kind of upsets me because I don't think that Sona should have ever gotten nerfed because she's kind of bunked anyways. But because they're using the Sona Taric meta, they nerfed her. And they're probably going to continue to nerf her because it's kind of a strong little BS meta going on. Do you think that Riot should they stop allowing certain things to happen, or should they just let it keep going? Because if you continue to nerf a champion just because they're being abused, you kind of kill the champion.
Right. I mean, I'll be honest. I think Sona was honestly in a spot that even without that strategy, she could have done some damage in the bot lane. I thought that just made it more safe. Like, I think that even if Sona was just a regular mage bot lane carry, she would still be a little bit overpowered. She simply just offered a little too much for how the game is played right now. And so I do think that the nerfs were justified. However, I do agree that, like, you know, I think there is validity to, you know, we've seen something like, here's a new item that comes out, and this champion that's, like, good suddenly becomes incredibly overpowered because of the champion. I mean, because of the new item, right? And then, so they either, like, nerf the champion and leave the item, or they end up adjusting something and then, like, or, like, they nerf the champion, and then they leave the item, but the item's still too overpowered, and they nerf the item, but they forget to revert the champion back,
right.
And the champion's just in a worse spot than it's ever been, right? So there are potential, like, you know, chain reactions like that have to be avoided, and in the past, Riot hasn't always done the best job of keeping track of those, but I actually think the Sona nerfs, in this case, I think they have been justified thus far.
Like, Sona, when she's a support, I don't think she was that strong. Or was I not utilizing her correctly?
I think you're absolutely right, but I think it's the fact of the matter is that from, like, a bot lane position with a tanky support that can protect her, like Taric or Tahm Kench, someone else who also has shields, with all the heals and the scaling she offers, and also remember this is a byproduct of the meta being more flexible than ever, you can play more champions in more lanes than ever before. So if you have Sona, you can have that, like, you know, that Aurelia mid or that Zed mid or, you know, that Master Yi jungle, like that physical, that extra physical damage source coming out of a different role on your team. And so, yeah, like, part of it is, like, Sona has become more viable in a compositional sense because you can play more physical damage champions elsewhere. But at the same time, what she offers in this specific position, and because of all the other compositional flexibility you can have, it just makes her too, she's too good for too many different situations. And in situations that she's not the best pick in, she's still safe because of what she offers and what she can pair with, like, and keep herself safe. She has enough heals, she can heal for herself, she has a speed boost, she has poke, and then if anything really bad happens to her hardened age-wise, you know, like, Taric can pop his ultimate on her, or Tahm Kench can swallow her up and run away, like, there's simply too many options that she has. By the time she's spit out, or where she's supposed to be in danger, where she's supposed to be in danger again, she's just going to have all of her cooldowns up again, because she has really low cooldowns and she starts to scale and does a lot of damage. So I think it's, like, it's not a healthy thing to be in the game in its current state. And I think that while the current state of the game is good, that doesn't mean we're going to see certain champions go through growing pains like Sona is right now. And so while, yeah, maybe the nerfs do feel unfair in a vacuum, I think in the current state of the game, they're completely justified and necessary.
Okay, so I'm still trying to wrap my head around this, because when it comes to League of Legends, having 150 characters, like, actually, it's more than that, isn't it, at this point?
I think it's about right.
Yeah, right? So the thing is that how do they force the roles at this point? If you wanted Sona to be AD, at this point, unless they force the roles, you have to allow it. And that's where I'm like, if they keep nerfing certain characters, why not just let it go? You know, we've seen, you know, let Malzahar go into top lane, if that's the case. Like, let it all just be crazy. Because the more characters you add, the harder it is to control the roles. And I just don't understand why they would continue to add characters without going back and reverting something. Or maybe even add a new item to stop it. I don't know.
Not only that, it's like also that, you know, because of the way the game has changed and, like, the new compositional flexibility. Like, we're seeing, like you said, there are more flex picks than ever before. There are more champions that can go into multiple roles than ever before. And while that does bring interesting diversity about the traditional sort of classes that people originally associated with the role does go away. And so it does make the game as a whole harder to balance as you keep adding more things. And I think that it's ambitious for Riot to keep adding in these new mechanics, you know, Yumi's entire kit's very interesting. Qiyana kind of playing off terrain now. Sylas being able to see ultimates. Every new champion we've discussed this has had a unique new ability that we haven't seen in the game before, a new type of interaction. And that's exciting, and it makes the game continue to evolve, and it redefines other things in the game, which is great. That's how you keep the game fresh. But it also makes it incredibly difficult to balance. And of course, there's, you know, champions that are going to be kind of, you know, just put in the mulcher for a while. They're just going to be, like, hard nerfed into the ground until they're bad, because, like, frankly, you can't balance 150 champions all at once.
Yeah, and balance, I think, is the most important thing of any game, which is what kind of throws me for a loop, because that's what I'm looking for is balance. If the roles change, that's fine. You can find tanks in top lane. Sometimes you see them in mid lane, and that's fine. But when it's unbalanced, it really starts to affect the gameplay, and you stop enjoying it so much.
Yeah, and I totally get where you're coming from there. I mean, you're absolutely right. And that's part of the thing, is League of Legends over the last year, and especially this year, has tried to do new things. You know, we're getting more open to different types of champions, different types of compositions, and that flexibility, I think, is in the long run in a good thing. But, like, with any type of, like, big change like that, there are going to be growing pains. I think we're experiencing some of those right now.
So, switching gears, can you do me a favor and recap what's going on with Echo Fox? Because there's a lot of buzz around that.
Yeah, absolutely. So, quick summary on kind of the start of the saga, which was about 3 months ago. I'll keep it short, but basically, it came out in a report. Richard Lewis reported via Dexerto that Rick Fox intended to essentially, like, sell his shares and leave his organization that he founded, Echo Fox, because, like, bouts of racism, incidents of, like, racial abuse from a shareholder, both towards Rick and also former Echo Fox CEO Chase Hall. This prompted an investigation by Riot Games, you know, regarding that, and they found that, you know, like, yeah, that happened, and, you know, this doesn't have a place in the LCS, and they were vague, but they're like, we want Echo Fox to take, you know, direct corrective action. And, you know, around that same time, Rick had said, he's like, you know, I'll stay. I won't be in business with a racist. I refuse to be in business with a racist. The problem with that is that shareholder and Rick Fox, yes, Rick Fox holds more shares on his own than this guy does in Echo Fox, but the largest shareholder, Vision Ventures Productions. So this company owns the majority of the shares of Echo Fox, and Rick and this shareholder are equal in this company. So basically, Riot gave Equifax a 60-day sort of ultimatum to do the right thing, but they weren't able to agree to any kind of terms, even after Riot gave them 7 extra days. And so they have to sell their spot because Riot said, like, we won't have this type of representation in the LCS. And so Equifax has now proposed a sale of their LCS spot. So after this split, it'd be no more Equifax if this proposal goes through.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, that was my follow-up question. So Equifax may be called something entirely different.
A report by ESPN, and it looks to be true, honestly, but, you know, it's still not completely confirmed. But a report by ESPN says that the buyer that Equifax proposed was Cranky Sports Entertainment. And so, for those who don't know, not only do they own, you know, the Arsenal Football Club, the NBA team, the Denver Nuggets, they also own the Overwatch League franchise, Los Angeles Gladiators. And they also own the esports brand, the Sentinels. And old LCS fans might remember Phoenix One. Well, the Sentinels is the rebrand. They also they manage the LA Gladiators esports operations on behalf of Cranky. And so this could be the return of Phoenix One to the LCS if this information holds and this proposal goes through and the sale goes through, which I would say, if all the information is correct, is very likely, given the fact that, like I just said, there's experience, the buyer already has participated in LCS, then I think that's what we might see. We might see them as the Sentinels, you know, represent the new brand, or we might see them, like, throw it back and go Phoenix One, because that's, you know, Phoenix One was a popular team in the 2016 and 2017 North American LCS.
Well, I'm excited to see what happens, just because I like the drama.
There's so much going on right now, and it's going to be very interesting to see how it all shakes down.
Now, for patch 9.15, what can we expect in buffs, nerfs, and any changes to items?
Fortunately, it's not as large as 9.14, so that's nice. We have some buffs here. So Kha'Zix got a damage buff on his Q, which should be helpful right now. Part of Kha'Zix's versatility is that he's, you know, he can evolve different abilities at level 6. But really, to do the damage he needs right now, his Q is underpowered. He needs to be able to level up that Q right away no matter what, which takes away his flexibility. This might help that. Malphite actually got some buffs as well. We saw Licorice pull him out on the LCS stage for Cloud9 last week, and while he didn't lose, he did start the game with a solo kill. You know, there's a lot of really good carry top laners right now that do physical damage. And, you know, that being said, Malphite might make a comeback in that regard. He's very good, you know, with his natural armor sources and all of that. We do have some skins. We have 2 new project skins for Pyke and Akali, both very popular champions right now, and should fit right into that. And also Project Aurelia and Project Jinx. Oh, and a Project Warwick. So we have a full new line of project skins coming out, which is a very popular line. So make sure to check those out if you play any of those champions. And that's all the major info as far as patch 9.15. You know, 9.14 was pretty big, and so it's like they really kept it kind of, you know, a little bit more minimal. 9.15, which I think is good, you know, because there were so many, it was all little changes in 9.14, but it took us so long to run it down last time, because there were like 35 individual changes.
Well, Nick, thanks so much for joining me. I really appreciate you being here. For those listening, where can they find more information about you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Nick Geraci. I think it'll be spelled on the page, NICKGERACIE.
This has been the Mason Vera Payne Show. Thanks for listening. Can't wait to hear more? Subscribe, rate, and comment at masonverapaine.com. That's MasonVeraPaine.com. Also, follow Mason on Facebook and Twitter at Mason Vera Payne. That's all one word. And don't forget to share the show with your friends.